Six tenant rights groups around North Carolina are forming a statewide tenants union. As WFAE's Nick Delacanal reports, the group will focus on aiding local efforts to unionize renters and expand tenant rights around the state.
The North Carolina Tenants Union is a network of six local groups from Asheville, Charlotte, New Bern, New Hanover, Raleigh-Durham, and Winston-Salem.
What we want to do is dramatically expand tenants' rights in North Carolina.
Executive Director Nick McLeod says the group will help renters who want to unionize apartment buildings, mobile home parks, or public housing,
so that they can negotiate leases together and advocate for repairs as needed.
The group will also lobby for stronger tenant legal protections, like capping rent increases, outlawing arbitrary evictions, and requiring landlords to clean up and prevent mold. The union could also provide legal representation to renters in eviction court, something nearly all now lack. More than 1.4 million households in North Carolina rent their homes. That's equal to a third of households in the state. Nick Delacanal, WFAE News.
Public housing authorities are supposed to provide housing for people with little money. But in one case, the Charlotte Housing Authority, now known as Enlivion, forced seniors out of a 50-year-old community in Dilworth and then bulldozed their homes to make way for a new development. But as WFAE's Steve Harrison reports, 6 years later, that new project hasn't broken ground, and the private developer is asking for even more time.
Dilworth is one of Charlotte's most desirable communities. Million-dollar, turn-of-the-century homes in walking distance to shops, restaurants, and Latta Park. Here's how one realtor pitches living there today.
Coffee, croissants, gift shops, you name it, Dilworth has it. And there's plenty more that we can see, but I want to show you a little bit about what the neighborhood itself looks like. We're right outside the city, and you have these quiet, adorable streets lined with homes with front porches and a great neighborhood feel.
A decade ago, the Charlotte Housing Authority decided it was time to cash in. Just off South Boulevard in Dilworth, it had a high-rise apartment building and 122 garden apartments for low-income seniors known as the Strawn Cottages. The Housing Authority partnered with a private developer in 2017 to keep the tower, but redeveloped the rest of the 16-acre site with a hotel, offices, and apartments, including some subsidized housing. The plan? Use the profits to build more affordable housing in other parts of the city. The Housing Authority relocated the mostly black, low-income seniors living in the cottages and then demolished the small homes as well as an activity center for the residents.
I understand that investors are in the business to make money. I get that. But on the backs of who?
That's Corrine Mack with the Charlotte Mecklenburg NAACP. She sees Strawn not as a smart business deal, but as gentrification. Except in this case, a publicly funded housing authority did it, not a private developer. To make matters worse, nothing has been built. The 16 acres is empty, except for two lonely electrical meters on poles, leftovers from the cottages.
Most times than not, it is black people who are the most harmed. Maybe never to move back to this community again.
One of those who used to live in the Strawn Cottages is Nellie Gregory. Her granddaughter, Nadja Gregory, takes me to her apartment in Greer Heights. We open a metal gate to her yard. She's 91 years old.
The reason I'm leaning is because I'm partially deaf. And I'm leaning with my good ear. You can talk loud to me.
She lived in a Strawn Cottage for nearly three decades.
But I remember they telling us that give us bundle of stuff to move.
If you could have stayed, would you still be in the cottage?
Well, I love that place. I wouldn't have been there 27 years if I didn't like it. I'd have been gone. That was quiet and good, and all the neighbors and things were peaceful. That's where I wanted to be.
The Housing Authority offered her an apartment in the Strawn Tower or another mid-rise complex on Park Road. But Nadja Gregory says her grandmother wanted to live in a garden apartment like her cottage. So she chose a housing voucher and moved from one of the safest parts of Charlotte to Greer Heights, one of the most dangerous.
Just be a lot of traffic going in and out. And so many people would come and just park in front of my house and stuff like that. That's what I didn't like.
When we first got here, it was a lot of drug dealing right in front of my grandma's house. Literally. I would have to come down here and tell people, you need to move your car. I'm going to have to call the police on you.
Though the Strawn cottages were for seniors, Nellie helped raise Naja.
And that's always been home for me. My mom graduated from high school there. Then we got our first car there. We moved from there to get our first apartment. And I always went back to live with my grandma. That place was like home.
The Strawn redevelopment is the brainchild of Fulton Meacham, the CEO of Enlivion, which is the new name for the Charlotte Housing Authority. With funding from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development in decline, he says Enlivion is at the forefront of a new business model to create new revenue to build more affordable housing.
If you're asking families that are on public assistance to be more self-sufficient, right, kind of pull themselves up by their own bootstraps, I think as an agency yourself, you have to do the exact same thing. You can't completely depend on the federal government to fund the needs that are local.
Under his leadership, Enlivion has created an offshoot organization, Horizon Development Properties, which now owns the Strawn site and has partnered with Boston-based The Fallon Company. The Strawn project, called Center South, calls for Fallon to get 85% of profits, and Livian would get 15%.
So as a sustainability strategy for us, we're now doing development.
But that high-reward, high-risk partnership has so far yielded nothing. No housing, no profits. And in an interview last month, Meacham said Fallon recently gave him more bad news. Construction might not start until 2026, which would be 9 years after the cottages were torn down. During that time, other developers have built thousands of new apartments in Charlotte, even during the pandemic.
People are building.
People are building.
So what's the problem? Like, what are they?
Well, I think you should ask them that question on their reasons. I think for me, the focus is, how can we assist in making sure that these units that we've been promised in the community get on the ground?
WFAE reached out to Fallon multiple times. The developer declined to comment. When asked whether Enlivion acted prematurely by moving out the residents and demolishing the cottages before construction was ready to start, Meacham said those cottages needed to be replaced, regardless.
It was housing, yes, but I wouldn't qualify it as a quality version of affordable housing. It needed to be redone.
About 150 of the planned 745 new apartments will be considered affordable housing, but they're for people earning between 65 and 80% of the area median income. The old Strawn cottages were for people making less than 30% of AMI, or about $21,000 a year. While the Strawn Tower is still there for very low-income seniors, Mecklenburg Commissioner Pat Cotham says some of the new units should be set aside for the county's poorest families. That's the biggest housing need.
It would be great if those people were included in this, because there's proximity to a park. You know, the bus is close. There's a lot of things close. And for any young person, there's jobs that are close.
Cotham says the entire Strawn saga is depressing. For WFAE News, I'm Steve Harrison.
I'm James Farrell. Last month, Charlotte-Mecklenburg Schools unveiled a new plan to help link teachers to affordable housing. Administrators hope it will retain and recruit new teachers amid statewide shortages. But will it work? Here's what some educators had to say about the challenge of living in a city where prices are rising fast. Delmonica Gallipo, a 7th grade English language arts teacher at Quail Hollow Middle School, took a roundabout path to education. She got her teaching degree in 1992, but spent more than 20 years working in banking. In 2017, she finally decided to pursue her passion and began a career in Charlotte-Mecklenburg schools. But that meant taking a cut in pay and running a side business as a tutor to help make ends meet.
The kids make up for it. That's one thing that my grandmother told me before she died. She's like, find something that you love. Don't worry about the money. It'll worry about itself. But living, having somewhere to live matters.
And finding somewhere to live on a teacher's salary in the Charlotte region hasn't been easy. In the 7 years since she started teaching, Gallipo has lived in at least four different places, including now in an apartment with the help of a roommate. The biggest problem, she says, is qualifying. Most apartment complexes require tenants to make 3 times the monthly rent. Alone, Gallipo often can't do that.
And that's been very challenging, you know, as a woman with grown children. It's like not even being able to afford, you know, a place. You know, I can't go and just qualify for a 2-bedroom apartment in a decent neighborhood, or really in many neighborhoods in Charlotte.
CMS says its own surveys found 93% of teachers identified housing affordability as a top concern, while 61% said they would consider leaving their jobs over it. Here's Nancy Brightwell, CMS Chief of Recruitment, Retention, and Talent Development, in an interview with WFAE back in October.
It's become enough of a critical factor for us that we have begun to have dedicated strategy around this.
So last month, CMS unveiled a series of affordable housing initiatives for teachers. Those include partnering with developers to prioritize affordable rental units and townhomes for purchase for teachers, partnering with local banks to create financial pathways to home ownership, and building an educator community on district-owned land with 100 rental units specifically for teachers. A UNC Charlotte study found rents have come down from their 2022 peak, but nearly half of all renters in the Charlotte metro area are burdened by high costs. The Canopy Realtors Association says the average sales price of a house in the Charlotte region in October was around $492,000, up nearly 27% in just 3 years. So will affordable housing initiatives help keep teachers in the profession? Ayumi Durden, a former CMS teacher who left teaching last year, is skeptical.
I think it's a Band-Aid.
Durden started teaching in Charlotte in 2021 after moving from New York, where she was a teacher in New York City schools for 7 years. But Durden says she took a 50% pay cut when she moved here. They were able to afford a home largely because of her partner Alan's job, but the mortgage and the cost of daycare for their kids meant they were living paycheck to paycheck. It had her thinking about taking a second job.
It was such a struggle because that also meant that me getting a second job would take away time from my own children.
Instead, she decided to leave teaching altogether and now works in education technology. Durden fears these affordable housing initiatives will just end up funneling public resources to private developers instead of focusing on the core problem, paying teachers a fair wage to make a life for themselves.
It is about the money, but what the money itself is signifying, which is, do you appreciate the amount of work that we put in? Do you value the work that we put in? Do you value the children?
Base teacher salary is controlled by the state. The starting pay for a North Carolina teacher with a bachelor's degree is a 10-month salary of about $41,000, 42nd in the country, according to the National Education Association. Counties have the ability to supplement that pay, and CMS boasts one of the highest supplements in the state. Teachers with a bachelor's degree start at almost $49,000. For those with a master's, it's about $54,000. CMS officials have said they still plan to advocate for higher pay. Here's Superintendent Crystal Hill responding to criticisms about the housing initiative at a media event last month.
This is just an additional strategy of what we can do right here. We continue to advocate all the time for increased pay at the state level.
Gallipo empathizes with colleagues who might be frustrated about the housing initiatives. She doesn't know if it will be enough to meet the need. Still, she sees it as a start.
They could just choose to do nothing, but at least they're trying to do something.
CMS says the 100-unit educator community is just a pilot program. It could be replicated if successful. James Farrell, WFAE News.
The Charlotte City Council later this year will consider a massive rezoning request to build as many as 1,500 new apartments and homes in South Charlotte. One part of the proposed redevelopment is to remake a low-income housing complex at the intersection of Providence Road and Old Providence Road. It's part of a plan by the city's publicly funded housing authority to redevelop valuable property, but some neighbors are worried it would pack too many apartments into a small space, and some residents worry they won't be able to return. WFAE's Steve Harrison has this report.
The Glaydale apartments are for people earning less than 30% of the area median income. For a family of four, that's about $28,000. What makes Glaydale unique is that it's in one of Charlotte's wealthiest areas, with high-performing schools and low crime rates. But the Charlotte Housing Authority, now known as Enlivion, wants to maximize the value of Glaydale by tearing down the 40-year-old apartments and redeveloping the site with mostly market-rate housing. Instead of 49 apartments, there would be as many as 380, on 8.5 acres. That's too many, says Dennis Grills, who lives nearby.
So you have the density doesn't fit into the area. The height of the buildings don't fit in.
Grills says he doesn't object to the affordable housing that's already there. In fact, he says he would be okay with more low-income units. But he says Enlivian's proposed 90-foot apartment tower doesn't fit in, even if it would bring more high-income renters.
Well, people might say we don't want affordable housing, and that's not true. I mean, Enlivian's already here. You know, Glendale's been here since the 80s. You know, it's not that at all. It's just what they, you know, what they're planning to do.
The Glendale redevelopment is part of an even bigger proposal to remake 115 acres at Providence and Old Providence Roads. Enlivian, Levine Partners, and Northwood Raven want to build 1,500 new residential units combined. For Enlivian, remaking Glendale is part of an overall strategy to create new revenue streams, so it's not as dependent on money from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. Enlivian also wants to create mixed-income housing, so low-income renters aren't clustered in their own separate enclave. Enlivian CEO Fulton Meacham explained the strategy to WFAE last year.
And so what we're doing now is we're bringing those developer fees, those property management fees that traditionally had went to third parties back to Enlivian to sustain our operations.
But that hasn't always panned out. In 2018, an Enlivian subsidiary, Horizon Development, reached a deal with a Boston developer to remake low-income apartments for seniors in Dilworth. The Strawn cottages were demolished and the residents moved out, but there's been nothing new built 6 years later. Alicia Parker lives at Glendale. Watching her son on the complex's playground, she says residents are wondering what's going to happen to their apartments.
They ask because they are tearing down other properties, and we was wondering when they're going to put new apartments here, but we was told that it wouldn't be no time soon.
Research shows that low-income children do better when they live in higher-income areas, like Glendale and South Charlotte, and that fits with Charlotte's goals to increase economic mobility. Enlivian says it will be 5 years before it demolishes Glendale. Parker says she would like to stay, or at least be able to come back.
Because I like the area, and it's quick to the highways, and it's not that far from grocery stores and different things and the pharmacies. I like the fact that we're in a neighborhood where it's close to a lot of older people and not a lot of younger people. So it's a lot of elderly in the community, mean less drama, less commotion.
Enlivian's most recent proposal with the city calls for 20% of the proposed multifamily apartments at the new Glendale to be income restricted. That would be 65 apartments, only 16 more than are there today. Grill says that doesn't make sense.
Now, if you want to build a new structure, that's fine, but I would have more than 20% affordable housing.
In rezoning documents filed with the city, Enlivian said the affordable units would be for people making between 60 and 80% of area median income, which is more than double the income of Glendale residents today. The Housing Authority told WFAE that anyone who is living at Glendale now will be able to return, and that some units will be set aside for people at 30%. Steve Harrison, WFAE News.
I'm Elvis Manayese. A rundown motel in West Charlotte is closing this week after the city deemed it unsafe. That means around 70 residents have to find new homes quickly. That's a tall order in a city that has a shortage of affordable housing. The city has put together a team with the help of several nonprofits to assist people in mass displacement situations like this. Janice Wilson stands in the doorway of what her family has called home for the past 7 months. Two rooms at the Lamplighter Inn, just off I-85 and Freedom Drive. It's late November, and she tells a fellow mother staying there she's worried what the inn's closure will mean for her six children.
Why do it in the month of December? You gotta think about your kids walk to school, so how's that gonna work with you with the transportation? You ready to go to work at 5 in the morning? This things gotta make sense, and somebody's gotta help us.
The city now has a team in place to help people when a motel or apartment building suddenly shuts down and leaves residents scrambling to find new homes. In this case, the city decided to close it because it racked up so many code violations and the owner blocked access to the site for repairs. That gave the team just over 2 weeks to find new places for residents to stay. Wilson was packing her belongings inside her crowded room. Her dogs were getting restless in their cages. She didn't know how her family was going to get through Christmas.
I have no way to provide anything for my children. I have to take whatever I can get for this month of December and place it going forth for bills.
City staff and nonprofits began thinking they needed a coordinated response to help families in this situation after the sale of a property in South Charlotte's Sterling neighborhood in 2022. It left about 40 families needing to find new homes within a few weeks. That's becoming more common as the city grows, land switches hands, and residents paying low rents are displaced to make way for new ones that can afford more. Carol Harderson is the head of Crisis Assistance Ministry.
And with each one, you have vulnerable people, and they go to different people. Some will go to a city council member, some a county commissioner, some will go to an agency, others will go to a, you know, a United Way. And so we wanted the families to have one place to go in this time.
Harderson says there have been at least five situations over the past 3 years where a motel or apartment has shut down abruptly. The reasons include burst pipes and code violations. The mass displacement team was created about a year and a half ago. Crisis Assistance Ministry helps find families a temporary place to stay, like a motel or shelter, while the group helps track down a long-term solution. The Housing Collaborative, Action NC, and Legal Aid North Carolina are part of the team. Legal Aid attorney Justin Tucker says part of the group's role is letting residents know their rights.
They have to go through the judicial process in order to get them out. They can't use self-help eviction tactics in order to force them out of the property, like turning off the lights, turning off the water, turning off the gas. Stuff like that could be considered illegal and could be considered a self-help eviction.
That's what happened to residents of the Lamplighter Inn. The owner, Chandrish Patel, disconnected electricity, gas, and water, but the team was able to intervene, pick up the tab, and restore those services. Tucker calls that success, along with the speed the team assessed the needs of residents and moved them out. But he says the team could take action earlier before utilities are shut off and code violations rack up nearly $14,000 of fines, as in the case of the Lamplighter Inn.
What we're learning is that some of these issues have been going on for a long period of time before it hit the precipice of where we're at. You know, the team starts hearing little buzzes of issues going on at these properties to maybe step in a little bit earlier.
Mayor Valas has called on the city council to strengthen enforcement of the city's code violations to help families living in unsafe conditions and avoid mass displacements. Action NC and other groups have outlined a proposal. If an owner won't make repairs, the city would pay for them, place a lien on the property, and take possession through foreclosure, keeping the property safe and affordable. As for the residents of the Lamplighter Inn, all have moved out before Wednesday's deadline. The team moved Wilson and her family into four rooms in a hotel and covered at least their first month's stay.
Everybody is really comfortable. We have a refrigerator. We can have a place where we can cook. They give us breakfast.
Some of Wilson's stuff is still at the Lamplighter, but she says drug dealers and addicts have taken over the place and made it hard to get them.
I mean, I'm actually loving where I'm at. It's just I need to get the rest of my belongings from out of that other situation so that way I can be done with that hotel.
The ultimate goal is to find a permanent home for Wilson and the others who have been displaced. The team says that could take another 1 to 3 months. Elvis Meneyese, WFA News.
Major support for WFAE's race and equity team comes from Novant Health.
The real estate market in Charlotte is hurting from both ends. One way that hurts families, the other way that hurts developers. WFAE's Tommy Tomlinson, in his On My Mind commentary, wonders who will get the most relief.
So it seems we have two housing calamities in Charlotte, and they're coming from opposite directions. By now, pretty much everyone knows about our affordable housing crisis. Rents have gone up across the board, outpacing wages. Private equity firms are buying up houses all over the city, making it harder for families to find a starter home. One of the most common paths to a stable future in America, buying a house and building equity, is out of reach for a huge number of Charlottians. But now there's another housing crisis to worry about. This one is a problem of office housing. More to the point, office space that nobody wants in the big uptown towers. Charlotte built those skyscrapers on the assumption that the city would always keep growing and people would always come uptown to work. The pandemic collapsed that notion like a bad pull in Jenga. Thousands of workers who formerly commuted uptown are now full-time remote or on a hybrid schedule. Millions of dollars worth of offices in those fancy high-rises are now sitting empty. Those of you with devious minds, and I'm raising my hand here as well, might be thinking of an elegant solution. Why not just turn those office towers into affordable housing? Two birds with one stone. I think we all know that's not going to happen. First of all, there are obviously some logistical problems in turning offices into housing. But more important, despite all their philanthropy, I don't think there's a bank exec or a real estate developer in town with the guts to welcome middle-income and low-income families into those gleaming buildings. It's too radical, too bold. The more interesting part to me is the notion that the owners of those old buildings need to be bailed out. City officials and developers are starting to build a low hum toward the idea of shifting some taxpayer money toward repurposing the office towers, or even tearing them down. It's funny. I don't recall those developers pitching any plans to bail out low-income families who've been gentrified out of their homes, or have their rents jacked up when some hedge fund buys half their neighborhood. You also might have noticed that every time there's a move to build affordable housing in well-heeled areas, the residents act like somebody suggested running open sewer lines down the street. Watch carefully these next few months and see where the money goes. Does it go to the people living paycheck to paycheck, or the ones living mountain house to beach house? It will be a good clue as to which crisis our city actually cares about.
Tommy Tomlinson's On My Mind column runs Mondays on WFAE and WFAE.org. It represents his opinion, not the opinion of WFAE. You can respond to this column in the comments section at WFAE.org. You can also listen to Tommy's podcast, Southbound, where he interviews notable Southerners. It's available at WFAE.org/Southbound, or you can listen and subscribe wherever you get podcasts.